Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey, and today we come to you from an undisclosed location, and I'm joined by Helen Tate Wright and Marcella Kirk, who you may well recognise from Land Rover Life. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Well, thank you ever so much for inviting me into your splendid little caravan. I've never been in such a lovely remote podcast studio. I'm really enjoying it. So we're here, yes, at the Beaver Land Rover Show. Thought I'd take this opportunity to join you because obviously readers will have seen your exploits and the preparation of your 110 in the pages of Land Rover Life over the past year or so. And yeah, just thought we'd take this opportunity to catch up and see what exciting plans you've got in store. So tell us a little bit, first of all, about how this project came about and how the 110 was really when you first got it.
Right, well, the project came about because it seemed like a good idea at the time.
Usually involves wine.
Yeah, we've done Land Rover Life and other magazines have covered our rally exploits in the past. So I started a rally with a Rallye de Gazelles, which is a rally that's French run.
Right.
And then Marcella and I have done two events together in Morocco. So endurance rallies again in the Sahara. So similar kind of conditions for what we're about to do, which is Dakar Classic.
Yes, super excited. I can tell you're absolutely buzzing, and the number of people who've been looking around the 110 on your stand, there's so much interest. Such a unique looking vehicle, but of course it's come an awful long way from, you know, when you first got it. As you said earlier, it was basically a pile of bits, wasn't it?
Well, this time last year her chassis was here at the show on the Mazda chassis stand. It was bright red, so people may have seen that. And we basically took to France, a pile of bits.
Yes, indeed. Yourselves are based in France, aren't you? You've got quite a lot of Land Rovers over there. This is just a part of your impressive fleet. But yeah, as you will have no doubt seen if you are a regular reader, the installments that you've covered over building this, it's a 1988? 1987, 88?
The donor car is 1988. So we got her in North Wales and we picked her on eBay, as you do. And I sent Marcella pictures of various things that were for sale on eBay and said, because we always have to have a car that talks to us, don't we?
We do, yeah.
So I said, which one do you like? And we both liked Nascari as the one, really, didn't we?
We did, yes. But she was shouting out to us. There was something really soulful about the car, and we could see past all of that.
You saw the potential.
Well, not just potential, we could just see there was something. I know it sounds like really girly, maybe, I don't know, but we are girly, so I'm not going to apologize for that bit. But you did. Helen sent, you know, different pictures, and we both agreed she was the one.
Yeah, she just said, me, I want on an adventure.
And I'm half Welsh as well, you know, so that had a little bit.
Yeah, there's a tie there, fair enough. Yeah. It's so you picked it up from Wales on the trailer, presumably, and did you go straight back to France where you live, or did you have work done in the UK as well?
No, she stayed in the UK for a bit and was stripped down, and we were waiting for the chassis, which didn't come until this time last year.
Sure.
And then we came over with trailer and picked up, because there wasn't, we couldn't salvage everything from the donor car. So the roof is original from the original car, the bonnet, the front slam panel, the eyebrows, there's all sorts of little bits, but the big bit, the tub was completely shot.
Right, okay.
So we had to source a new tub, and we've actually just met the guy that we bought the bulkhead off, because the bulkhead was completely unusable, so he's actually just come to see.
Oh, brilliant. Like. See his bulkhead in person.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So we'd sourced all the major components and then came with a trailer, took her back to France and put all the bits in the shed and went, okay. I'm quite sure what we do next, but I'm sure we'll work it out.
It's quite funny. A lot of the correspondence we get at the mag, like the work in progress pages and stuff like that, it's that massive peak of excitement when you first pick a project up, and then as you sort of start to analyze it, you're like, oh, there's a lot to do. And by the sounds of it, you were very much in that boat. But what a thing, it's come to be just looks fantastic now.
Yeah, she looks really cool. We're really chuffed. And I think there was a lot of people that sort of questioned whether we could do it. But Chris, my husband, his dad had a garage, so he was kind of brought up with cars. And we're both quite practical. And I've always sort of had the thing, well, how difficult can it be? And we're intelligent people, you know, you can look it up. And we called in lots of help, don't get me wrong. I mean, my friend Jonathan, he's been instrumental in this build. Unfortunately, health problems have stopped him being sort of more hands-on.
Right.
But we call him the Oracle. So whatever we want to know, and he gets random phone calls all through the day. We go, right, we've got this problem and I don't know how to fix that. And he'll go, what you need is this. And you do that and you do that. And we go, oh, right, thank you. So yeah, Jonathan's been a huge part of the build and a huge part of our Land Rover story, really.
Right. I was going to say, everyone needs someone like that. I mean, I still have a contact in my phone who are people I can rely on to you know, get me out of the hole when things come up. But you can't put a price on it, really, can you?
No. I mean, Jonathan's one of those guys, he sort of lives and breathes Land Rovers, and he literally can walk onto a showground like this and go, well, that bulkhead ain't from the year of that, you know,
yeah,
that it's registered to, and it's got this bit on and that bit was made on this place, and the size of the bolt that fits that on is that. So yeah, I mean, he's brilliant, and we owe a huge amount to Jonathan for actually making her work. And I think the scariest thing for us wasn't bolting it all together, because that's just like Meccano, isn't it? But actually getting the TD5 engine to work, because she is a bit of a hybrid. So she's a 1988, that's what it says on the chassis plate anyway. But she's got other bits in her, but all within the regs for the classic.
Sure. This is something I, to be honest, know quite little about, the rallying, the regulations, the specifications that things have to get built to. There's, as you were showing me earlier, the fuel tank, for instance, the amount of thought that's gone into that. It's really, yeah, amazing. The building a Land Rover is one thing, but making it eligible to compete and be safe and competitive, it's a whole other kettle of fish, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a massive document of regulations which we sort of referred to, and same for safety devices, who built the roll cage. I think there was, I don't know how many pages of regulations. And when I approached them, because we decided that a roll cage was just way out of our comfort zone, so let's go to somebody who knows what they're doing. And spoke to Chris at Safety Devices, and he was like, okay, can I read the regulations? And I was like, yep, there you go. And he was like, oh, okay, that's, well, you haven't got anything that actually complies with that, so it will be a completely custom build and built around us as well, which I think is the other important thing, because we are girls, and so our body sizes are different. And even like when we went to sit in the seats, they have to fit people with hips.
Sure.
And we're not as deep in our, you know, in our torso as men. So when we were looking at the seats, the guys at Dim Tweaks, who obviously know all about it, were like, well, you know, the holes in the seats where the harnesses have to come through have to be at the right height and all of that. So yeah, it's quite a technical thing. And then the seat had to be in the car, but we couldn't actually finish the car because they needed to lift the tub off again to build the roll cage. So
it's one step forward, two steps back all the time.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Totally. And of course, we were building it here in France, and Safety Devices are here in the UK, so we had lots of trailer trips backwards and forwards. And
it's a big undertaking, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah. But
what a thing, it's come together just amazingly. Looks great. It obviously put some photos up, but the wrap is certainly the thing that draws people in, isn't it? Tell us a little bit about how that idea came about, really.
Well, the original idea is on my other 110, Priscilla. So she has the rusty look with the rivets and our little mice and things. And that was just sort of a, like, do a kind of slightly Mad Max desert rat type look, and so it's kind of become our signature look. So for Purdy, we wanted to carry that on but make it different.
Okay.
So,
and Purdy originally was white, wasn't she? So that kind of was a big part of keeping that color and the red, you know, red and white for the UK.
Yeah. But we wanted to.
We got the jury.
If you think back to sort of the vintage Land Rovers that were out in the desert, they were mostly white, and they did. There was a lot of canvas backs. Now, to have a real canvas back doesn't many work for us.
No.
So we wanted to make her look like she's got a canvas back, which I think we've achieved quite well.
Definitely, yes. Really cool.
You have to keep pushing her, don't you?
Yeah.
So it's, you expect it to move, and it doesn't. It's a fantastic job.
I think that was the most difficult thing for Blue Lizard, the company that did the wrap, to find images. So in the end, I ended up phoning Exmoor Triv and saying, I want to fit one of your canvas backs, or I don't want to fit a real one. And the guy went, I don't really understand it. So I sort of explained, and I was like, what I need from you is the high res images of one of your canvas backs in situ, so that we can put that onto our car. And was like, if you say so, yeah, I'll send you the images and you see how. So they haven't seen her yet. They are here at the show.
Okay,
come and have a look.
I was going to say, I bet that's a question they've never been asked before.
I think that's very, very, very
definitely the first time they've been asked about that. So,
but between Exmoor Triv and Lizard, what a job with that! It's just finished her off fantastically.
Yeah, and Blue Lizard have really gone over and above with the detail. If you put the two cars side by side, she's definitely a step on from Priscilla.
Right.
In the level of detail, of a precision and resolution of everything that they've printed.
Yeah, without seeing it in person, it's hard to get across just how unique it is. It is really fantastic. But let's go back in time then. Where did your love of rallying all begin?
Oh, wow. Well, I've always kind of been car obsessed. I don't really know why, but right from a little girl, I'm old still, honey, actually, this big bucket full of matchbox cars, and there used to be a shop in the town, and they had a display case in the window, which you still had it now, it wouldn't be worth a fortune. So all the little cars were in, and when I went shopping with mum in the week, it walked past and go, I want that one next, so I saved up for it. And then I suppose my life took me away from your off-roady things and more into sports cars. But when we both moved to France about the same time, so Marcella and I met in France.
Oh, all right, okay.
We lived just down the road from each other, and you had a Trooper, and as you do.
Loved the Trooper, just a mate that was.
She was brilliant, wasn't
she? I saw you on the other day, and just, you know, my heart fluttered. I literally cried the day that car when I should never have let it go, but it didn't have any seatbelts left from the dogs, and and it was going to be hard to register it in France, actually.
Yeah,
that was more the problem. But yeah, so we lived near each other,
and so yeah, Sella had a Trooper and I had a V890 at that point, and yeah, we live in rural France, so you need a 4x4. So
sure.
And then the Land Rover rallying thing started later, like 10 years later. And I love Morocco and I go to Bampic quite a lot. And I was sitting in Marrakesh talking to a friend, a Moroccan friend. And he said, well, I don't understand why you've never done the Rally de Gazelles. I went, because I haven't got a clue what it is. So I went back home and looked it up and thought, okay, well, that's something I'd like to do. But then it was like another 4 years before I actually got to do it. Looking around for what vehicle to use, it had to be a Land Rover, because I just did. And we decided that a V890 wasn't really the most sensible thing to use. And that's when we first met Jonathan, because Jonathan was on, what's that Facebook group called? Land Rover Owners Sped? No, Land Rover, I don't know.
There's so many, isn't there?
Yeah, one of the Facebook groups. And so I just put a post out and said, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And if anybody's had like relevant experience, because I haven't, what car should we be looking for? Which Land Rover? And Jonathan said, well, I've got one that's prepared. So we came to the UK to see it. And like we said about things talking to us, before I'd even got out of the car, I thought, that's not my car.
Right, okay.
And I was really like, I wanted to like it because on paper it was perfect. And I just walked around and I sat in and I went, and he said, what do you think? And I went, I'm really sorry, but I don't like it. And he went, oh God. So I was really upset, and he said, right. And I was like, well, I don't know what to do now. There's a kind of pinned everything on this car. And then he said, right, you better go and look in my shed, which was full of defenders. And he said, walk around and tell me which one talks to you. And so that's how I got Priscilla. And the first rally that we did wasn't with Marcella, it was with somebody else. And it was such a traumatic experience for me.
Okay. Is that just because of, like, you didn't know what to expect, or?
Yeah, all of that. Realised when we were on the ferry to Morocco that I hadn't got the right teammate.
Ah.
That's a big part. And then the whole first time in the Sahara is, I didn't really know what to expect, and it was mind-blowing. And the whole experience was just mind-blowing. And
yeah, that's right.
I would imagine, sorry to interrupt, it can be the thought of the, it seems so daunting. It's such an enormous landscape. And if you know, if it is your first time, I can't even imagine how difficult that must be.
Well, I think when I'd been on the first one with Helen, when I was there, I felt overwhelmed, but I had the benefit of being with Helen, who'd already been and done it, you know. So Helen didn't have that. I did, and it was still daunting. And I don't think, and when I came home, I couldn't, it was difficult to explain to people what it is actually really like out there.
I don't think you can explain.
And you can't until you get there yourself. And a massive sense of achievement afterwards because of that. But, you know, I know, well, you can't put it into words. The landscape, the heat, the type of terrain, that you are literally, you know, when you said Mad Max, maybe imagine that.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information, or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
That is where you are, and you get out the car. You know, there's a couple of times on the rally, you know, I'd get out and say, Helen, I need to get out of the car. I've just got to try and get my bearings. How? I don't know, because you can't see anything.
Right.
There's nothing to see. Just landscape, sand or rocks, or there's nothing that is you know, you've got Beaver Castle over there. We'll go to the north of Beaver Castle. But there's nothing like that. And it can feel quite lonely and desolate out there. And if you're not with someone that has already been, I think it would be quite scary.
I should imagine it, but it didn't put you off as the main thing.
Well, I don't know. When I got home, I kind of couldn't talk to anyone about it because nobody really got it. And it took me, I would say, about 3 months to process in my head the things that I liked and the things that didn't work, and think, how could I make the things? Because the thing that I loved was driving my Land Rover in the desert, and there's something, the best thing ever, and I'll have to send you the picture. There's a picture that was taken from my up. There's just this massive landscape, and Priscilla, not Purdy, was just a little tiny dot in the middle, and that's kind of it. Sums it up, and there's just you and your Land Rover and your dust cloud. And you're kind of, a lot of it is, I think, is about facing yourself in a way that you've never done that before. It's about learning what you're capable of. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
And finding your limits. And when you learn new stuff about yourself that you didn't know, that's quite a big, especially, you know, when we're not 20.
Oh,
no.
Are you?
No.
Okay, so you're 40.
I wouldn't be
I mean, that's really eye-opening. I never would have, as someone who's never done a rally, I never would have, you know, thought that that would be the case. But I suppose when you're out there with so much, enough, you know, there's nothing around you but landscape, and you've got an objective, and you're only with one other person, that must be incredibly, like, kind of humbling in a way. Like, the you're out there in nature, but you've got to overcome everything, haven't you? It sounds mind-blowing. I'd love to have a go at that. I must do it.
Well, and I think as well, for when you talk about rally in the UK, it's a different thing to what we've done. Yeah. I think we're lucky in that we've lived in France, where the culture for rallying is really about endurance rallying. And because obviously it's easy for the French to get to Morocco and Africa. So their rally culture is very different to the culture in the UK. Because when you say rally, it's comp safari, isn't it? And it's short, sharp stages. Well, that's not what we do at all. You know, ours are endurance rallies, and we go out day after day, and we just have to keep going. And that's the brilliant thing about us as a team, because our history is, we've now known each other for 20 years.
Yeah, at least.
And we've kind of faced everything together, because we were both, neither of our partners were with us when we arrived in France. And Marcella had her son with her, thank goodness, because Sal helped us a lot, bless his heart, he did. So we did, you know, we moved to a new country together where we didn't really speak the language, did we? And that, in a way, has a parallel with going to the desert, because, you know, we're expats in a foreign country. We can't really converse with people. So we went to French class, and we kind of found our way. So we've overcome massive things together already. And yeah, when I'd done two rallies before you came on, we were two different partners, and I was I'd just been let down by somebody in cellar and come over to France, and we were sitting and we'd had dinner and quite had some wine as well.
I'm noticing a theme here.
So much braver.
And you were asking me what was happening, and I was like, oh, I can't find anybody that I'm happy with. And you just went, well, why can't I come? He's like, yeah, you can. Yeah.
Next day, she had me in the quarry.
That sounds really loud.
We literally went to the quarry, and I didn't scream when you went down angles that were quite unusual.
Yeah, and then that was one of the things from the first rally, that there was a lot of squealing from the passenger seat. We'd done training and stuff, but and it is different when you're, you know, you're faced with a sand dune, and then you sit on the top and you kind of almost hover on the top, and then you're going down. So you see sand and sky, and then you see sky, and then you see sand.
But I think for me, that was, I loved that experience anyway, and you were showing me how to use the Land Rover in the quarry. And but when we're actually out there, I don't have any doubt in Helen's ability as a driver. So maybe it's easy for me to not squeal, because I know you're going to do it. I just...
And then sometimes she says when I'm going, oh, I don't know if I can do that. And she's going, yes, you can.
Yeah, that's what you need.
Yeah, because I know she can. And I often say that to people about, you know, as a team, that not only am I lucky to have the opportunity to go because of Helen, but to have a driver like Helen. Mm-hmm. You know, because I have been on those rallies, and there's a lot of people think they can drive up those sand dunes or across the beach or anywhere else that we've been in the mountains. And I'm in a position where I can watch, you know, what's going on. And Helen's ability as a driver is she's fantastic. So I don't squeal, because except with excitement, because I get all excited. Like, come on, you can do this.
I've absolutely utmost respect for anyone who drives in sand. Yes. It's so different to any other surface, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, we don't get huge opportunities to try it over here. I mean, Mac-on-Terre is sort of within throwing distance. That's kind of sand dune driving, but out in the middle of nowhere, it's a completely different kettle of fish.
The sand is different too, is it? Like talcum powder. It's like solid water, if that makes sense. So
like an egg timer sand.
Yeah, right.
So it runs. It runs, you know, and that's how I see it.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Again, I wouldn't have thought that. Like, even when you go to the beach, the real dry stuff's totally different to when it gets more hard packed, isn't it? So it, yeah, it must change, you know, so much.
Yeah, it's moving around,
but it is so fine. I mean, we've only had to dig ourselves out once, haven't we?
Yeah, and it was a good one though.
Were you fairly well wedged?
Well, it was just a silly situation, wasn't it?
Yeah, I didn't spot the sand quick enough while Helen was driving, to be honest, because it did say it in the road book. And this is another thing that we've had to overcome. So Helen's driving with someone who's never even looked at a road book before, you know. I use a sat nav to get out of the town where I live.
I completely relate, yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden, not only have I not even got a map, not allowed a map, you just get a piece of paper that says in 20 metres, take the left-hand lane to on the road. Well, there's not even a road there.
Right.
It's take the left bend, take the left road. Well, where is the road? We're on it, but you can't see it. You've just got pictures. You can't see it. It does say that there's a telegraph pole, so we'll use that as something to look at.
And sometimes I just get headed.
Or a heading, yeah, it just gives you a heading. But it had things in French that I didn't, you know. What is a true? What is a boss? You know, and...
Boss and crew.
Boss and crew. And I've never heard of these words, Helen. I don't know what they are in, you know, in English, and now they're in French. I don't know what it means. So sometimes I wouldn't miss things, especially on that first rally.
Right.
And that
must have been a hell
late. Yeah. Because, and then it would, I'd think, oh, I've not seen that sand quick enough, and we hit it, and then we're in it.
Is it all done on tulip diagrams?
Yeah.
Is it? Right, okay.
But that's another thing to say that might not make sense, that they're in French.
Right.
Everything's in French.
Okay. Wow.
And our briefings every night for the next day are in French.
Right. I could see how that would be a steep learning curve. Wow.
Yeah, it is. So you're learning about navigating, reading a road book, taking your briefings in French, And it was a massive learning curve, that was. So sometimes, yeah, on the first rally, I learned a lot about, you know, things that I need to look out for more. So when we got stuck in the sand that day, I didn't pick it up quite quickly.
It wasn't 100% your fault, though, because we came round onto this sand and they were... Stephanie was in front of us, wasn't she? Spinning her wheels up. So I slowed down, but I hadn't anticipated what she was doing quick enough, so I was in the wrong gear. We got bogged, but then
they'd already turned all the sand up.
Yeah,
so
they churned it all up. But then the thing that I remember most about that is that those guys coming along, and they were going to just tow us out, and we were like, no, go away, we can get ourselves out.
That was very polite. Oh, you said that. We can't really say on here.
Okay, fair enough.
And we were, because we'd prepared for that, hadn't we? And we had a plan of how we would get out of sand. And actually, one of the best photos of us is taken from the support vehicle after they got back in their vehicle.
Yeah, because they were just going to come and take over because we're just girls, you know. And we were like, go away, we can do it ourselves. And we got ourselves out.
And you lose points for things like that. So we'd prepared for it. So we didn't want to... You know, we need to, this is part of doing the rally.
Sure.
Is getting out of trouble ourselves.
That self-sufficiency, especially when you're out in the desert, must be a huge part. Like, what sort of, I've been looking around the 110 and it's absolutely, what a top bit of kit. What sort of stuff do you have to take with you on these rallies?
Well, for Dakar, it's a little bit different than what we've done before. For the other rallies, we've literally had to take everything in the car. Right. So camping gear, spares, tools and all the rest of it. For Dakar, we have a service vehicle. So we need to take stuff in case we have a problem on the stage, which obviously we hope we don't, but we have to be prepared. We need to but the main bulk of the stuff will be in my service vehicle. But previously, we've actually even had a fridge.
Because
you've got to keep your gin cold, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah, we have been packed to the rafters, haven't we, with everything. All the equipment that you have to have under the regulations, plus everything, the players numbered for each day of the rally, you know, everything.
Yeah.
Food, spares for the car.
Yeah.
You know,
one of the difficult things, well, it's not difficult, but it's just when you're out on the stage, it's not like you can stop and have lunch because you're on a regulation rally. So a regularity rally, for people who don't know, in very simple terms, is to get between point A and point B in a set time. Now, what we're going to do at Dakar is actually taking what we've done previously sort of to a new level, because previously our regularity's been over the whole stadium.
Right.
So we know, like, say, if we start at 10 o'clock in the morning, we've got to get to the end by, I don't know, 4 o'clock, let's just say, for argument's sake. On Dakar, it's going to be a lot of work for Marcella to do, because the regularity literally changes between each square on the road book.
Right. Wow. That's going to be an undertaking.
Yeah.
But the way that the road book's written, it tells you, it gives you the time that that section should take.
Whereas in the previous regularities, I've had to calculate it.
Right, okay.
Which is more difficult. So this will be more at keeping us on track.
Yeah.
But I found the maths of that was, you know, because you're constantly thinking, by the end of that page, that's what time we should have arrived. Right, Helen, you're gonna have to go faster on this next section.
Right.
But you can't arrive ahead of time. You're gonna lose maximum points. You lose loads of points for that.
Yeah.
So you can't hide around the corner and then drive around one time.
Except that team did on the last day.
Yeah, we have seen a team do that, but yeah. Hey, we're not them.
So the last rally you did was Santana Trophy, wasn't it?
That was the last rally that I did with Purdy, but Marcella didn't come on that one because it was the first, it was a test event for Purdy. She'd literally come out of the garage. I took her for an MOT equivalent in France to make sure that we hadn't missed anything obvious.
Right.
Because you know when you get a little bit too close to the coal facing, you can't see what's in front of you. So my husband came with me on Santana Trophy because we built the car together and I kind of needed the security of him to be there if something went wrong, but we could kind of work it out because she was really untested.
Box fresh. Yeah. Completely.
Totally, yeah. And we just didn't know what was going to happen, but I wanted to take her on an event that had a similar... Yeah, you put it into a similar situation to what you're going to be facing, because that's the only way I think that you can give her a proper test and just see what happens. And actually, we only had one problem on the Santana, and that was that a bowl fell out, a pan hard rod.
Right.
For whatever reason. Might have been a nut failed, it might have been one crisp on, who knows. That happened on stage one, which was a scary moment because suddenly the axle's a bit free-edged. But we worked out what it was and we fixed it and we carried on and got through all the rest of the stages and finished fifth in our class. So I was quite chuffed with that.
Wow. That's, yeah, really good going for a first event out for an untested car. What a result. But Dakar is the big one, isn't it? Dakar's the real sort of the pinnacle, the big goal.
You say it, the hairs go up on my arms and I think, oh...
I can sense the excitement. This look.
It's emotional. It's like, oh God. Because I think because I know what the last couple of endurance events have been like, I know that this is really, they were tough. This is a biggie, isn't it?
Yeah.
But if anyone could do it. Well,
I think the driving, I'm not really scared about. We know we can do that. We're going to have long days, but we kind of know how to deal with that, don't we? The thing that worries me the most is being able to sleep.
Really? Okay.
Because when you get in, you're so hyped at the end of a day, but at the same time, you're really knackered.
And we're camping.
But for 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Yeah, because we have to get to Saudi on the 30th of December, and the last stage of rally is the 17th of January.
Right.
So that's 3 weeks more or less.
Wow.
And camping
has been challenging.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have the same worries as Helen in that sense, because I sleep on a washing line. If I'm tired, I'll go and get on the grass and go to sleep.
Yeah.
And that's a real... I know that's a gift. But camping in Morocco, I mean, it was sandstorm.
Oh, God. That was just horrific.
It's like being in Kansas. You think you're going to be whipped up in the air and taken off.
Well, there was other people. This particular incident on that last rally, we were on a plane and...
Aiden's in the car, so what
are they? It's hard to explain what a sandstorm's like until you've been in it. The tent was all closed up and the sand coming in and falling on your face.
And I remembered like lying there and the side of the tent was on above me, was on my face.
Piling up with sand.
The wind just blowing it, completely onto the top of you, and the noise is
unbelievable. But some of the other teams were actually having to physically get out of their tents and hold them down.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's what, I mean, that is all part of it. That's part of the adventure for us. But you do need your sleep. We all know how important that is. And so for Helen to be driving, me concentrating on directions, and you've not had a decent sleep is going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, I think we'll come to sleep for a week after we get back. I'm off to South Africa from there.
Nice. No rest for the wicked. Wow. The physical and mental toll rallying across distances like that must take, I can't even get my head around it. It must be incredible. They're not called endurance rallies for no reason, are they?
No, and though, because Helen is so organised, you've probably realised she's really organised, so hence we have a fridge. You did always make sure we had snacks and food, because travelling around Morocco, the food is not always the best, and you can get very poorly as well.
Right.
So, I don't know what it's going to be like when we're in Saudi, but in Morocco, we were, there was plenty of food on offer, but we were quite strict about what we ate. So we ate things that were in skins, so bananas, avocados, boiled eggs, kiri, those laughing cow, anything that you could unwrap, we'd eat it.
Right.
Because other people on the rally do get ill.
Yeah, I think in Dakar it will be better, because it's a proper, ASO, the people who run it are a massive organisation. There's a big catering tent. So I don't think the food when we're in the bivouac is a problem. But what our challenge is, food is for Dakar, is like being able to have stuff that we can pick up while we're on the move and eat easily to keep us going through the day, because we are not going to have time to stop and go, oh, let's just
get the jammy dodgers out.
Yeah, lay out, get the picnic blanket out and have a bit of a, yeah.
So we've got to have stuff that we can grab and that we can eat that is going to keep our energy levels up.
Is that generally stuff like fruit, or do you have any like favourite snacks when you're out on rallies that keep the energy going but don't like cause to crash afterwards?
Kind of nuts and those sorts of things take away.
I've got some stuff that we're going to test actually over this weekend. So naked bars, if you've come across them, they're like cold pressed and dates and nuts and things. They're really good because they taste nice, and that's another thing. You've got to want to eat it.
Sure.
It's like a little treat to us, isn't it? We had some good energy drinks on the last one, which I'll be asking for some more.
Yeah.
They're made by a company, Vodka Kick, actually, but that's...
They haven't got vodka in.
They haven't got vodka in, though, unfortunately.
So we do have a funny story about that.
They're Mango Go. Mango Go.
And they're really lovely.
But they were like our treat every afternoon. We'd go, right, let's have one of those mango-flavoured energy drinks. Because it's little things that you look forward to, little ticks, through the day. So things that taste good and give you a bit of a kick and a boost, but not just physically, but mentally, it gives you a little bit of, right, okay, we're ready to go again, you know?
And we have lots of supplements and stuff that we take religiously. But the stuff, we had a bit of a mare on the last rally for various reasons, which you could fill a whole podcast with, but anyway,
still came second.
We still came second, yeah. But we got to this checkpoint and the Mango Go tins are sort of like a yellowy orange, aren't they? But also in our fridge, we're not having a fridge, by the way, on Dakar, originally, but in the fridge, we also had some pre-mixed cans of gin and tonic,
right,
which were in the same colour. And so we just reached in and didn't look at it. And they opened it and went, oh, okay.
We just opened gin and tonic. Oh, well, it'd be a shame to waste it, wouldn't it? Yeah.
It was the last stage.
It made the last stage more interesting.
Oh, wow.
We had to hide the cans, though, didn't we? Just in case anybody got upset about that. But
an easy mistake to make, especially after a long day.
It was a mistake.
It genuinely was. But we don't like waste.
No.
No, certainly not. Certainly not.
It made us laugh though, didn't it?
I don't think we even noticed till we drank it. Have I opened the right can?
No.
Never mind.
What even is the right can at the end of a day's rallying?
Well, we weren't even at the end, you see. That was the thing. We were halfway through at the stage.
Oh.
But we kind of just thought, oh, well, never mind. And we didn't know our sweaty toe. We didn't know where we were on the rally anyway, did we? Trying to work out. That's the one I remember most. We were literally driving to the end of that stage and we're both trying to calculate, and that road looked dead straight, didn't it? And it had so many bumps in it.
Yeah.
So I'm trying not to kill the car because we still got to get home afterwards, and trying to calculate, and going, I think we're going to be 6 minutes late, and you're going, you got to speed up, and I'm like, what, there's a bump coming.
Yeah, like, and when you say bump, it's like they're big dips in the road that you would take off from, or you hit the front of the car on the other side. That they're the worst ones, when you hit something, you know. So there's a reason why we wear ash helmets,
because you head
on the devices type as well, because that's another new thing for us with all the regs for Dakar, which are FIA regs. So sort of similar to, not quite as stringent as F1, but, you know, put in place by the same people. And one of the changes for 2026 is that now the hands device is obligatory for everybody.
Yeah.
So,
you know, your 4x4. You've chosen every upgrade, every bolt-on with purpose. So when it comes to tyres, chunkier, wider, more capable for the conditions, you want the perfect fit. Not just any tyre, your tyre. That's why you'll choose 4x4tyres.co.uk, the wheel and tyre specialists, trusted by Land Rover owners and serious off-roaders alike. Whether you're upsizing, overlanding, making your Defender look the part, or your Discovery turn heads, we'll guide you to the right set. Then, with over 800 fitting locations across the UK, from online to on-road, we've got you covered. Browse by vehicle, wheel size or brand. 4x4tyres.co.uk. The right fit, the right place, the right price.
They're a weird bit of equipment. I've used a hands device a few times in this country, and they take a bit of getting used to, don't they? They're a bit of a fiddle to get on and off, and then you can't.
I tried one on at Demon Tweaks, didn't I?
Yeah.
I've not tried mine on yet.
No, that's being women in a sport that's dominated by men has its challenges in other ways, because you might have noticed we have certain body parts that men don't have.
Do you?
And one of the things is that when you've got boobs, if you imagine a hands device, it's got straps coming down here, and they tell you to measure around your chest, underneath your pectoral muscles, well, underneath your boobs for us, but then that distance, the straps aren't long enough.
Right, got you.
So they're not going straight down, they're going over.
Yes, because a hands device is moulded, isn't it? It's like over the shoulder and straight down, so I can see how that would be a challenge.
Well, so Simpson make a thing called the hybrid sport, which is the moulded section is smaller than the others. It's all expensive, obviously. And they allegedly make a female version, but it's still, they obviously assume that the females that are doing rally don't have very big boobs. So I've had this hysterical conversation with a guy called Steve Watkins at Nicky Griss Motorsport, because he sent some hands devices. They arrived, I tried it on, and I sent him a picture. I was like, this isn't right. And he's like, well, I don't understand what's wrong. And I'm let me explain to you about boobs. It's like, I'm not understanding. So I said, what size bra does your wife take? In fact, Steve, I apologise. I'm just like, all of your personal life is down in the car. So he was like, well, I don't know. So I said, well, you don't ever buy her fancy underwear for a present then, do you? Anyway, he got we made her try on the device.
Dear lady or dinner lady?
Dear lady.
Oh, ring the dinner lady.
I can't remember her name. So I'm sorry, Steve's wife, I've forgotten your name. And he was like, I've learned more about boobs in the last sort of 2 days than I ever knew. So there you go. Yeah, it's very difficult. And the same with the race suits. The women's race suits don't fit.
Right. I'm really hopeful that some companies take heed and actually start accommodating for this stuff, because it's a bit stupid in this day and age, isn't it?
You can have them made to measure.
Yeah, it's ours. You don't have our race suits yet, because yours, you've had one that fitted.
Yeah.
But the guys are doing tweets were like, this is the biggest women's size one that we do, and it was there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And just like, I can't do it out.
And Helen's not big by any
stretch
of the imagination.
It's
at all, and yet you couldn't get a race suit off the peg.
No.
Well, I hope you. Well, you say they're being made now, are they?
Yeah, they've actually been made at Sparco, and they're on their way to Demon Twinks. So
very good, cool. Demon Tweaks been helpful. I was going to say now is the time if you want to plug any of the sponsors that you've
Demon
got.
Demon Tweaks have been really helpful. They were so patient with us. Well, took over their warehouse or their shop for a whole morning, didn't we? Going around, we were like, right, and now we need to try this, and now we need to do that. Steve at Nicky Grist has been, it's been hysterical dealing with him. In fact, everybody this, you know, the people that have helped us have been really, really helpful.
Oh, good.
And all of our partners, you know, have been brilliant. So, and that's done. Kind of a list everyone to be here for ages.
Yeah, so they're so behind us, aren't they? And in general, people, the closer we're getting now, it's kind of having a snowball effect, isn't it? With the people who are wanting to see how we get on. And you know, a year ago, it was just a chassis.
Yeah, and I think people kind of thought, you know, can you actually build a car? Are you actually going to get enough funding place to go? You know, is it really going to happen, or are you just going to wake up one morning and go, I don't know what I was thinking?
That has happened. We have had that conversation. What the hell were you thinking?
Wow. You're sticking with it, though. That's the main
thing. Well, then the next day it's back on track.
And dry air. We have a chat, don't we?
Yeah.
Normally for a couple of hours, and then we sort of evened ourselves out again.
And then we're here.
And then we're
here with a car.
And it's all a bit real suddenly and close.
I said to someone the other day, she said, "What you know? What got you into running?" I told her the story, and lots of people know the story. You know, Helen and I and dinner and agreeing to go on the first one. And a big thing for me, and I said it to her, it was like the first time we were flying across the Sahara together and properly flying across. We were able to put a foot down, weren't we? Plane and the flaps were up. The flaps were open because we liked opening our flaps. It's like our little carry-on moment that we have every time we're driving. And we put them up and we're flying along, and it was truly magical. Wow. I was like, Helen, do you remember when we just used to make beef bourguignon and have a glass of wine on a Sunday? look, we're here and it's not real. This is surreal.
Yeah, it is very surreal, actually.
What an amazing achievement, though. And I'm so pumped that you're doing Dakar. I can't wait to see how you do. And of course, hopefully, Helen, you'll be gracing the pages of Land Rover Life with your exploits from that. And we can't wait to see how you get on.
Absolutely. Well, we want a cover, actually.
Well, I'm not saying too much, but there might be opportunity for that. So, yes, stay tuned.
Watch this space.
Absolutely. Well, I can see there's people outside this lovely little caravan waiting to speak to you. So I'll let you go. Helen, Marcella, thank you ever so much for giving up your time to appear on the LRM podcast.
Thanks for your support.
Yeah, thank you.
Not at all. Hope you enjoy the rest of the weekend. We'll no doubt catch up very soon. Anything to add before you go? Or
just to say thank you actually to everybody that has given their support, because there's so many people, far too many people to mention, and to the Land Rover community in general, who, you know, comment on the videos that we post and send little messages, even though it's like, oh, you've done that wrong, but it doesn't matter.
They're engaging and being
interested. And yeah, just thank you to everyone, and please follow us and cross your fingers for us. And you know, we want to get to
share our journey with us.
Yeah,
we'll show you as much of it as we can.
Yeah, and if there's anybody who does stuff with cameras, that's something else we need, so that we can share it. In-car camera setup we haven't even looked at yet, have we? Because we do want, you know, if it's such a big thing for us, but we want to share it with people, because it's our adventure when we're in the car, and it is a very personal thing for us as well in the car, but inspire other people to do it. Yeah. Because more British teams should be going to Dakar. You know, so far there's, well, to the classic, there's only Andrew.
Yes.
And us.
Right, okay.
Yeah. I think there's another British team this year, but with the Land Rovers, we can't count them.
Just a lesser vehicle.
Yeah.
So that people can follow you on YouTube. You've got a YouTube channel, haven't you?
Yes, the YouTube channel is Project Purdy 110. So we started that, obviously, you started building the car. So that's Purdy with the P-U-R-D-E-Y 110. And then on our social media, it's Gazelles Off Road Team. So yeah, pop on, follow us, give us some support, and thank you very much.
Well, again, thanks for coming on and putting us up in this glorious little caravan. That is absolutely beautiful.
He's called Louis.
And for sale. So if you want to get yourself a caravan, if it doesn't go this weekend, and I'm sure it will, give the guys a shout and see. You could get your own little palace on wheels, really.
He is. He's called Louis the Champer Van.
Louis the Champer Van. Fantastic. Well, once again, Helen, Marcella, thank you ever so much for joining us. And thanks for listening. And we'll catch you next week.